Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Today's Saturday morning, October 23rd edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast is presented by Blue Wire Pods. Go to bluewirepods.com today for access to all of our awesome podcasts across the great Blue Wire Pod network. Also, Outsider.com. Go check out Outsider.com today if you have not already done so. Go check us out on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. Just type in Outsider. You'll find our awesome stuff there. Just join them. Very excited about it. Very excited about it. And yeah, on the show today, on this Saturday edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. On Saturdays, you know, sports reporters assemble with the Daily Beast, Robert Silverman, and the Detroit Free Press's Andrew Hammond. So go check those guys out. Give them a follow if you have not already done so. Biggest stories this week in sports from Deshaun Watson, Dolphins, NFL, NBA, first week impressions, Knicks, Hawks, Ben Simmons, all that good stuff. Coming today on the pod, Jimmy Stein, covering the Alabama Crimson Tide. So we talked a bunch of Alabama, Tennessee, Bryce Young, all that good stuff. And then Atlanta sports guys, no Garrett this week, but we do have Max Markovich on the pod today. Talk Hawks, Cam Reddish, that awesome showing, DeAndre Hunter locking up Luka Doncic on Thursday. But yeah, great stuff. Falcons, Hawks, Braves, all that on Atlanta sports guys, and all of that. It's coming up next. Uncle Darren, let's go.
Sports reporters assemble!
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello. Welcome back to the Sports Reporters Assembling. You heard it. That's what we do on Fridays. But the full cast is back together. Andrew Hammond, after a week away, is back with the gang. Andrew Hammond of the Detroit Free Press. Andrew, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How you doing, man?
The sun is coming out here in Knoxville, Tennessee. The Vols are on the road in Tuscaloosa for an easy one. Let me check my notes here. The Alabama Crimson Tide.
Chase, question. Sorry to like interrupt your open, but you've got to answer some questions, dude.
Oh no.
Why are you throwing French's mustard out onto the field?
That's a lot happened there. That's a lot to unpack. I've unpacked that a lot.
I do wonder though. Were you in like the horde that like basically just kind of bum rushed the front part of the student section after like being in like the 5 millionth row for like 4 hours? You guys
no.
saw open seats and were like, screw it, let's go for it.
That was like a weird thing you saw in the park. Like I don't know, that was just a different thing. That wasn't really a big deal. I just, the people who were talking about it, is kind of crazy that they were able to get in the golf balls. They do check security, and they are, you have to go through a metal detector to get in and all that kind of stuff, clear bags, all that. I'm going to guess the mustard, my final guess on that is they got it from somewhere in the concessions that like that came, they found it on the ground.
They might have snuck it in via alcohol too.
I don't think they're sneaking in mustard. I think you're giving these kids too much credit. What I think happened is someone found a drunk kid.
Hey, dude, I've been to games where mm-hmm. a kid taped, I want to say it was either 3 or 4 variety bottles of Fireball, like duct taped mm-hmm. them to his body,
mm-hmm.
and he walked in. And this was, I don't know if there were metal detectors, but all I know is he snuck them in. It's like 40 degrees outside. He takes off his shirt, drops his pants, and he's ripping duct tape off in the freezing cold. And I'm just like, these college kids have so much creativity. It is frightening. So, yeah, now I can see somebody sneaking in some alcohol via a French's mustard bottle. Shout out to French's for the free advertisement they got over the weekend.
What's your favorite mustard, Andrew?
Favorite kind of mustard? I am a brown mustard or honey mustard guy.
I'm not a brown mustard person whatsoever. I like the classic is my way, and then number two is spicy.
Yeah, I'll go spicy mustard on. It depends on what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Chinese food, it works.
I like honey mustard.
Honey mustard's great. I didn't know we were counting honey mustard because I don't count honey mustard like.
Yeah,
it's a totally different thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been told that I have the palate of a small colicky child.
Same.
For liking honey mustard. And I do enjoy putting sugar on all kinds of foods that probably shouldn't have them, because I think sweet and savory is a lovely combo.
Oh no, we've heard about the Coke alcohol stuff and everything else that you in your youth.
Exactly. But I don't think you can count honey mustard as a mustard.
I don't think so either. I agree with you.
Really? Okay. So if we don't count honey mustard, then yeah. I'd either go spicy or, you know, I'll even go a little bit of the Grey Poupon.
See, I think we can qualify this. We can, like, answer the is honey mustard a mustard question very easily, because it's like if you ask for mustard at a restaurant and they bring out honey mustard, you're like, no, I asked for mustard. Like, that's something where you're just like,
I feel like you would be the guy to do that.
Yes, I mean, it depends on what
you've absolutely done it before, haven't you?
No, but on the flip side, if I ask for like honey mustard with my chicken tenders, like Bob having the palate of a 7-year-old kid, if I ask for that and you bring me mustard, I'm gonna be like, this is not. I didn't ask for mustard. I asked for honey mustard. Those are two different things. But if you bring me mustard that's spicy or brown, and I ask for mustard, it is what it is. That's fine. But if I ask for honey mustard, it's a different thing entirely.
Yeah, I like, there's a kind of mustard that I've been getting a lot lately. It is a Dusseldorf style mustard. It's very mild, but it's not, it's got a lot of flavor, but it doesn't have a lot of, like, it's got less vinegar in it. So it's a very sort of smooth, but still very flavorful mustard. It's like imagine a lot less spicy Dijon style mustard. It's a German mustard. And they sell it at the local Super Key Food in these very sort of attractive barrel stape glasses, which then, you know, I watch and I get a free glass out of it. So win-win for me.
There you go.
The kind of mustard I like. And when I want a honey mustard, well, I've got a bear in the fridge and I can, you know, just squeeze the plastic bear and make my own honey mustard.
Speaking of win-wins, the Philadelphia 76ers versus Ben Simmons.
Where should we begin with Philly and Ben Simmons? I mean, there's so many avenues. There's Shams being incredibly shameless about just allowing himself to be turned into Simmons's agent's mouthpiece. I mean, say what you will about Woj, he's able to he kind of closes the door to the sausage making factory, so you don't have to really see the awfulness and the water carrying and the beet sweetening, you know, right on its surface.
Who's Sham Schefter?
Yeah, Shams Charyana and his truly avant-garde prose stylings. That guy writes sentences that have never been seen before in the history of the world.
That's that Northwestern. That's that. That's the Northwestern in him. That's a McGill graduate. How dare you, Bob?
Did he go to McGill? Wait a second. Are you?
He's from Chicago. I think he went to DePaul.
I thought he went to Northwestern.
He may have. I thought it was DePaul, but I could be wrong.
The whole. I don't want to defend either Ben Simmons or the Sixers.
No, it's amazing. People are just suddenly, man, every single person who's a wannabe GM and thinks that they, and sides with ownership and all this stuff is just piling on to this Ben Simmons is a fraud bandwagon, which I get because he's acting like a giant baby.
Then the smoking gun was like the Jonathan Givony Draft Express tidbit that everyone's latched onto this week. Did y'all see that?
No, I didn't see. I saw
it. Oh, yeah, the old blog that he wrote.
Yes.
Where he goes, actually.
Oh, was that the 2016 thing?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I saw it. But
maybe Brandon Ingram should be the first pick in the draft instead of this lazy fraud, Ben Simmons.
Also, if anybody watched Ben Simmons at LSU, because somebody I follow made this point, if you watched Ben Simmons at LSU, none of this should surprise you. Like, he was kind
of... That was Givony's point.
Yeah.
That was the point of the blog that he wrote, man.
Like, it is... Yeah, because I remember watching...
Just FYI, let's not slander the fine middle school of journalism. Shams went to
Loyola
Chicago. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, close enough. But, you know, hey, Medill graduates can get this slander. If you're listening.
It's an undergrad degree, man. Come on.
I know. You know what? Hey, I am all for... This is more joking, if anything. Because, you know, Medill grads get very...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, like Medill, Mizzou, Syracuse. Yeah, no, they can all get these hands.
Wow.
No, but seriously, so back to Ben Simmons. No, I'm not taking either side because it feels like both sides deserve some blame here. Because
this is also, Maury really should just, I'm sorry. No, you cannot wait this out and have it improve. You are not going to get 25 or 30 games of quality Ben Simmons play and then be able to trade him for an actual star in return.
Especially when Doc Rivers is just kind of just watch. He washed his hands of everything last year. That should have given you the sign.
You need to take the poo-poo platter and just be okay with that. That's it.
I don't think he's going to get the poo-poo platter now. Can I tell y'all what I think is actually how this is going to end? I think they get nothing. I think he gets cut as a coffee mug closer.
Absolutely.
You can't, wait a second.
He's absolutely
I'm not Bobby Marks, but how can you exactly... I don't think you can just cut him.
There's something that they're going to happen. Like, they are going to get out, buy out, whatever. I don't think this ends with him getting moved.
No way. A buyout?
Maybe that's a take, but I don't see Daryl agreeing to CJ McCollum and Filler or Buddy Hield and Filler.
Great trade! CJ McCollum and Filler would be an outstanding return for Ben Simmons.
What I'm saying is that they're not going to do that. What I'm saying is they're not going to do that. And if he's going to wait it out, like Simmons might just walk away from basketball. Like we talk about Kyrie walking away from basketball. What if Simmons just walks away?
That's not going to happen.
Okay. This is bad. But him going on radio and talking about, like, we're prepared to drag this out and Philly fans need to strap in and stuff like that. It's just, it's so bad on both sides. And then, I mean, Tobias Harris. Protect Tobias Harris at all costs. Nice guy, Tobias Harris.
This is more Tennessee Volunteers simping, and I don't think I'll stand for it for any second longer.
Here's where
it just means more down here, Bob.
Of course it does. This is what I am interested in, though. If you're the Sixers and Ben Simmons was clearly unhappy, okay, then you try and trade him.
Yes,
knowing Ben Simmons comes back, Like, I feel like they handled this poorly. Like, here's what I would have done if you bring Ben, if Ben Simmons decided to come back, basically for financial reasons.
By the way, I love those photos of Ben Simmons with the cell phone.
Just not giving a shit. Absolutely.
I love that. I love it so much.
If you can't relate absolutely. To that,
I'm like, I look, he's he, like Marshawn before him, he's here just so he doesn't get fined.
Yeah. And
I think you have to respect
literally. Literally.
He went back soreness, the one thing MRI can't pick up, so like he could just keep, like he went with the back soreness route, like he was feeling tight and couldn't participate. Like, that's an all-time great move, back soreness. There's nothing you can do about that.
I'm dealing with some back soreness right now, actually. And was so crazy. I feel like anyone else can as well.
Well, and what's crazy about this is, so he shows up to the facility basically for financial reasons. If I'm the Sixers, I would have done this. Hey, you want to practice? Awesome. So you're going to work with one of the coaches, and you can't participate in any, you know, team workouts, nothing like that. You're going to be on a separate court working with a coach. If you don't like it, go ahead and go home. But to sit there, and this is where I put some of it on Doc Rivers. Like, Doc, just, can we just, can Doc just go into the sunset and just be
The very stupid thing the Sixers should have done is they should have said, like, he doesn't want to be here. Okay, don't make him go through the ritual of showing
up.
So that and you just, can have sad pictures of him looking sad. And everyone agree, like, okay, we won't fine you because clearly it's not going to do anything.
Well, and Doc saying, hey, can you get in this drill? And he says no. And then Doc says, hey, can you get in this drill? And Ben Simmons basically just dropped a ball and literally went home. Doc, come on, dude. Did you really think this was all going to work out?
But what is he supposed to do? Maury's put him in bad spots. Like, what is Doc Rivers supposed to do with this?
Here's what I said in multiple group chats, by the way. Here's what I said. Simmons for Kyrie.
Oh, hell no.
Really? Think about it.
I know. Bob, I love you.
Why?
I was going to say, are you asking Andrew to explain?
The reasons are self-evident.
Why are you
why no?
No, this is why I say no. I don't think Kyrie will get the shot. Like, Kyrie won't get the shot.
And unless the city of Philadelphia plans on instituting a vaccine mandate on anytime soon, he can play in Philly. He can also play in New York. Surprise. Because the policy is really dumb if he's traded to Philly.
That whole thing with, I'm not saying Kyrie's not a coach killer. He's not a team killer. He just wants to do his own thing. I don't think Doc wants another headache.
Oh, really?
Hell, I don't think Maury wants another headache,
Okay.
So I don't think Maury cares about headaches.
Your choice, you are faced with this choice as a general manager. Mm-hmm. You can have Buddy Hield and Harrison Barnes, and by the way, I think people are sleeping on Harrison Barnes a little bit.
What year is this?
Eric Spears fan.
People expected him, you know, he got slotted in as the fifth guy on those great Warriors teams, mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe he never seventh. Really lived up to his draft slot, mm-hmm. and he was always thought of as a complimentary piece, but Harrison Barnes is actually quite good now. Any case, Harrison Barnes and Buddy Hield, or you can have Kyrie. A moody, no one has any idea what he's going to do, brain boomed Kyrie. That's your choice.
What about Tyler Herro for Simmons?
No, Philly's not. No.
Oh, anyway. God, no.
Okay.
Ben Simmons doesn't want to deal with Joel Embiid and a bunch of other vets. Imagine Pat Riley in one ear and Jimmy Butler in another.
Yeah. Ben Simmons and Jimmy Butler already have a great professional relationship. I think that'll happen sometime soon. No. One, Miami doesn't have the salaries don't work out. There's no way for Miami.
Westbrook for Simmons.
No.
Let me tell you something. If you have Ben Simmons as the starting center, flanked by Kevin Durant,
mm-hmm.
and James Harden,
mm-hmm.
and Joe Harris,
mm-hmm.
and Patty Mills, mm-hmm. let's say, or any one or one of their role players. That is a killer crunch time five. You can let Ben stand in the dunker spot.
Mm-hmm.
Will he actually dunk is the question.
And you can sick him on your team's best opposing player. That is an effective use of Ben Simmons. And he can be a secondary ball handler to take some pressure off Harden. That is an effective use of Ben Simmons. Brooklyn is one of the few teams in the league where Ben Simmons, as currently constituted, works. I will continue banging this drum. Ben Simmons for Kyrie, and Kyrie and Embiid would be a killer 1-2 punch.
I agree.
Kyrie, Tennessee Volunteer, Tobias Harris, mm-hmm. and Kyrie, that's a team that could challenge the East. And then, of course, we'd potentially be setting up a Brooklyn-Philly Eastern Conference Finals. Who would not, with Ben Simmons and Kyrie taking on one another, who would not want to watch that?
Hmm.
Now, the few Nets fans who I spoke to about this scream from the high rafters, no, 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 that's a terrible idea, no. But what they're not taking into consideration is that they're wrong.
Bob, I love you. Like I used to, you know, what they're not, what they're forgetting is that they're wrong as shit.
Yeah, that they're stupid and wrong and should apologize mm-hmm. for stupid wrong. That's what they're sort of leaving out of this equation.
I just wish Ben Simmons was in the arena tonight. Like he's not going to be in the. He's more than likely won't be in the arena for Nets Sixers, but he needs to be. Purely just for Philly fans have their first true villain since like Sixers fans have their first true villain since Michelle Williams of Destiny's Child. So. I feel like we need to have that moment.
What is that reference? What are we talking about?
Oh my God, Chase, you're like five. Jesus Christ. So Google Destiny's Child.
That's the group from Smart Guy, correct?
Fuck me.
Oh God, Chase. Jesus Christ. Oh God. Beyonce, Michelle, Kelly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Chase, are you fucking with me? I swear to God, I'm going to come to Tennessee and I'm going to punch you in the face. I was like, Jesus Christ, son. Oh, God, that was great. Well done, Chase. Well done.
As you were saying.
Dick.
Language, man. Andrew. Language. We don't like... you. This is what you missed last week.
Oh, that was something
you
he did miss.
Your little hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to... We're gonna avoid blue material on the show from now on.
Aww.
We just lost so Andrew.
So we're just gonna be more black.
Darn. No, we're gonna avoid the cuss words and the rude language. Okay. You think you can rein it in there a little bit, Carlin?
No.
Okay.
I'll try, but no.
I'm sorry. I realize I'm censoring you, and this is cancel culture, but please.
Bob, you know you and I are basically like shipmates in cancel culture. We know yeah. It doesn't exist. We just hate it. Netflix is totally going to hate us, aren't they?
I actually, and I'm going to avoid saying which publication and which person did it because they still work in sports media, but I was actually fired from a Knicks blogging gig for using too many curse words.
Mm.
About the 2014 Knicks. Now, that's a team that would make people curse a lot, I think, in my defense. And in my other defense, no one was... It was a... I got $80 per Knicks blog. I had to write 8 of them a month. It was, you know, a little bit of cash on the side to just sort of write some things about the Knicks. And I was never edited once. After I was hired, I received... I self-published the entire time, I believe. Yeah, I self-published every article. No one from editorial said a word to me after I was hired. And I did this for, I think, maybe 4 months before, you know, again, I didn't hear a single thing from the people running this site. Not one. Not one comment about what they liked it. They wanted me to cover different subjects. They wanted something, blah, 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 blah. Until I received an email saying that I was fired and they were retroactively editing my posts to take out the curse words. And that I was being fired for violating AP style. Now, in their defense, there may have been some, like, note somewhere that they... That all blog posts were required to adhere to AP style, which generally avoids using any curse words unless I'm directly quoting someone. But maybe they could have mentioned something over the 4 months. I think the last straw was that I referred to Nick's owner, James Dolan, as an F-word wit. I think that was one thing.
I mean, you aren't wrong.
Again, that's also part of my defense. But my defense was, you know, I've cursed a few times over the course of the last 4 months. Maybe someone could have brought it up at one point, because it was clear that nobody was reading a single thing that I wrote until somehow the cuss words got flagged. And I wasn't even told, like, listen, we're going to change these retroactively. Don't do it moving forward. It was just you're fired. And so I emailed the person who had, like, back to say, like, listen, can we have a conversation about this? And they said, no, I'm too busy, and then never responded.
Wow. Yeah, Bob, we're going to have to talk. We're going to have to talk off air about because I have a feeling which side it is, but I will.
I think I know too, but
I don't think you do, but that's okay. Actually better.
Well, that brings us to our last topic on today's show. Deshaun Watson, Tua Tagovailoa, and...
Oh, jeez.
That doesn't bring us to Deshaun Watson.
And you're telling me that I shouldn't cuss, and you bring up this topic.
Okay. This game steamed this week.
Put that a thesaurus, man. Get creative.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me just say that everybody is stupid, especially the Dolphins, because, oh, Jesus Christ, what are the Dolphins doing? Hey, we have this Prius that, I don't like this Prius. Let me get this Ford F-150. Yeah, the Ford F-150 literally has everything wrong with it. Why do you think it's been sitting there for 6 months? You know what? I'll take it anyway. I'm good. I'm fine with it. That's what the Houston Texans, or that's what the Miami Dolphins, are basically doing. They're taking a crappy looking car.
It sounds like someone is not taking into consideration the J.D. Power and Associates Award to the Ford F-150.
Yes, I'm taking that into consideration.
Okay.
He beat Bama. That's the J.D. Power Associate Award.
Sure. Why not?
Okay.
I don't know. Like, I don't buy that. I think these conversations still come up, and I wonder if these things get out there to gauge the temperature across the country on this kind of thing in the fan base, where they get it out, it leaks, they want to see how people respond. Has it been enough time? Nope, clearly not. All right, back to cold calling, back to not doing anything for several months, where it's just like, that's where I feel like we're at, is just these teams are interested and just have no, like, that they're not concerned about the moral aspect to this at all, and that they would love to have Deshaun Watson on their team, but they also know that the blowback will be strong, and they want to see if they can stand the heat. And then they put it out there, and then it's like, nope, can't stand it yet, so we're gonna push it back in there. And it's like, well, what if you just didn't do it? What if you just put this player on ice forever? You don't have to trade for him. Like, I understand the talent aspect of it, everyone does, but it's done. Like, I don't understand. Like, I don't see a scenario where it's celebrated. I don't see a scenario where the fan base universally signs on for this. Like, the 23 women, they're not going anywhere. This case is not going anywhere anytime soon. This will hang around him for the remainder of his prime. So if you are not okay with that, and this is the correct take, I am the correct take decider here. You should not want Deshaun Watson on your football team. You should not want him in your building. Like, that is something that you just should not want. That is a bad look. There is no way around it being a bad look and saying, hey, we care more about winning football games than we do about the culture and our fans. And that's just a bad look.
They do care more about the culture and about winning football games than they do about their fans.
I know.
I'm going to actually be a bit of a contrarian here.
Okay.
I really don't, like, I think empowering pro sports leagues to function as, like, a shadow police force and shadow judiciary is an incredibly bad idea and has not done much to actually deal with questions of domestic violence or drug use or any of these other things. Like, yeah, if a football league, okay, drug use is not as good an example, because if a league wants to, you know, excise performance-enhancing drugs, they do have a right to set up standards and stringency tests, even if the cheaters are always going to be one step ahead, et cetera, et cetera. But just when it comes to domestic partner violence, I really do feel like, yes, it would be better, like, if the judicial system, the actual judicial system, the cops, the courts, everything, did a much better job of actually investigating and prosecuting these cases. They don't. They do an absolutely terrible job. But I'm not sure if I want the NFL to suddenly try to fill that void, because I feel like it just allows people to feel like some kind of vengeance has been meted out. And I understand, like, the desire of all kinds of people to say that they don't want to root for a team with people who've been accused of these crimes on them. But I kind of think that actually, one, I just don't like corporate entities being given that much authority. And two, I feel like it allows, to a certain degree, the question of solving the larger problem of how do we investigate and then theoretically prosecute these kinds of crimes to slide to a degree when people assume, well, you know, no NFL team should trade for Deshaun Watson, the league will ban him for X number of games, et cetera, et cetera. And now justice has been done, when it absolutely has not. And moreover, when, like, ask anyone who's really studied this and ask any advocates for women's groups to talk about this, and they say, like, removing that partner's income is not a good way to make life better for the victim. And again, we're getting a bit of field of sports here, but the point being, I really think, like, yeah, if the Dolphins, like, the idea that trading, any team trading for Deshaun Watson would suggest that the teams care more about winning than they do about morality, I would be like, yes, and they do. Let's not pretend otherwise. If fans want to walk away from that product because of that, well, okay, that's fine. That's your choice as well. I mean, and it's a choice that's entirely understandable. If fans, other fans want to say, like, I find this repugnant, but I still want to root for this team, that's understandable too. We kitty-corner all kinds of ethics to participate in sports fandom. Or again, at least I do. That, you know, there are plenty of things about the way that sports works that I find utterly reprehensible, but I still watch. So it's clearly not that much of a problem. So, yeah, I kind of think, like, yeah, they should go ahead and trade for him. And I really think the league should be out of the investigating its employees' business altogether. One, because of the question of corporate power, and two, because they absolutely are terrible at it. So that's my take on that.
You mean the NFL that absolutely needs to be investigated, and they're just like, oh, we see nothing here.
No. I mean, look, this I keep going back to the Ray Rice investigation, when the league claimed it was, you know, moving heaven and earth to try to figure out what had happened in that elevator. And it turns out, in varying degrees, depending on who you believe, that they had the tape, or their investigator just sort of never asked for it, or the people who would have been in charge of determining whether or not Rice should be suspended sort of made it clear they didn't want to see it. Funny to think about now in retrospect, Robert Mueller-led investigation of what the NFL did turned into
a simple case for Robert Mueller.
Yeah. Turned into a, well, it's clear the NFL screwed up here royally, but as to why they might have done that, well, that's not our position to say. So not only did they have a full team of people investigating Ray Rice, they hired an outside, you know, esteemed prosecutor to come in and investigate the investigation. And the only thing that happened was that Ray Rice's career got ended. Yeah, what he did was reprehensible. Yeah, he should probably have served some kind of time. But that's a problem with the criminal justice system and not necessarily one that the NFL can fix, ever. In fact, I would argue they only make it worse.
You know who I feel bad for in this situation, though? Say what you want about how he plays on the field, and I'm not going to, you know, joke around and kid with this. I feel bad for Tua here because you're expected to, and this is essentially any athlete.
Tua has been put into an absolutely god-awful situation. I mean, he never really had time to recover from the hip injury. Then he ended up with like a fairly awful Miami team with limited weapons on offense.
They basically traded or let go of anybody that could have been capable of helping him out.
And then, you know, jerked him around with Ryan Fitzpatrick. If a team had drafted Tua and let him sit for 2 years until he was completely healthy, I think you might see a very different player. And now getting him shunted to Houston while they're pawning off, like, you know, Brandon Cooks, too, while he still has an iota of value, that's not a better situation, man. His career is really big. Like, you know, this is... I think commonly accepted wisdom at this point, but prospects are so dependent on which franchise they land in.
It's frustrating because you sit there and you look at, you know, basically the situation that he's in. You look at the Washington football situation where it's like Washington kind of put themselves in this situation to be.
Is that the trade now? Is it a three-way?
So it was funny because you had some Washington-based media saying, "Oh man, they're going to bring Tua in," but like those actually in the know basically were like, "Yeah, that's not happening." It was just like, "Yeah, if we're going to bring a quarterback in, it's not going to be him." It was just like, "Damn." it was just like super rude. It was just like, yeah, we want a quarterback. No, we don't want him. Not him. Get him out of my sight. But no, I mean, I look at this as the whole NFL industrial complex. I like to call it, and paraphrase it from a friend of mine, I like to call it the draft industrial complex.
I've heard that before. That's a good saying.
Basically you need to get a guy that fits the mold perfectly of what a 1994 quarterback looks like, i.e. Davis Mills. I think we all kind of recognize, especially Chase and I, knowing that, you know, we both watch college football, Davis Mills, decent quarterback in college.
Does that translate? Number one recruit in his class.
Do we see translations of that into the NFL? Not really. And not in a good way. Like, Davis Mills basically got the job because it's like, yeah, we're going to get rid of this problem child here. So congratulations. You are now a part of a rebuild that we don't know how long it's going to take. Not exactly awe-inspiring, not exactly the type of thing that you are supposed to be looking forward to. And the sad thing is the quarterback prospects for the next 2 years, when you look at it in college, unless somebody puts it together, you know, immediately, all the way from now through team workouts, combine, all that. Yeah, you're looking at maybe a 2 year drought of decent quarterback play.
Yeah. Whew. All right. Well, heavy ending to this Friday edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, the Sports Assemble edition. Bob,
we can talk about our content that we're excited about and want to share with the Chase Thomas audience. Maybe that'll prove a more upbeat ending.
There you go. What do you got for us, Bob? Yeah.
I'm watching Dune, mother flupper.
Same. When are you watching it?
Well, I'm going to watch the Knicks tonight. So my significant other has has felt that the movie, the thinly veiled parable about Western imperialism in the Middle East, but featuring space penises shaped worms, is not kind of her thing to watch. So I got to find a time when I'm not monopolizing the TV. So it's probably going to be Saturday, I think, is a Saturday afternoon thing.
Okay.
I'm excited, though. I'm very excited. I mean, look, Zendaya is Michi, and you've got Timothy Chalamet in it. I'm very excited.
Jason Momoa looks.
Yeah, you got a quippy Jason Momoa. There's all kinds of fun stuff. Look, I like a good Toof Toof movie, and this is has a lot of Toof Toofs and weird religiosity. I'm very excited for it. Should be fun. I still dig the David Lynch version.
We know, Bob. You love David Lynch. He's a big David Lynch guy. I like David Lynch a lot too.
Yeah, David Lynch is good at directing movies and TV shows.
He's pretty good.
I don't know if you know.
Pretty solid.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I would agree.
So yeah, Dune. Me and Andrew are both here for Dune.
Okay.
I'm watching Dune literally as soon as I finish this podcast. No, I was going to watch it this morning just because I'm off today. And I'm like, oh, yeah, and I'll get a chance to watch it. Got out of bed like an hour later than I wanted because I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to lay here. Never, kids, memory foam beds are dangerous. Like, you'll just, like, want to sleep all day.
I got a weighted blanket recently.
Oh, those are the best, aren't they?
I sleep in a weighted blanket every day. I got one for my birthday. It's incredible.
It just puts me right the F out.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very exciting for me. I'm getting a little used to it, and I'm wondering if I should double up and get a second weighted blanket, because...
You'll never get up, Bob.
I need that weight, man. I need the weight. I'm getting too comfortable with the 25-pounder. I need to step up my game, weighted blanket-wise. So, yeah, Dune is the thing I'm excited about. If you want to talk to me about David Lynch... or the sands of Arrakis, or any of that, you can find me on Twitter at Bob Saieta, BobSaietta.
I just have this visual of Bob just adding weighted blanket after weighted blanket, and him just...
I'm going to be like the princess in the gosh darn pea, man, by the time I'm done. Just bury me in weighted blankets, Daddy. That's my motto.
There's nothing I can do to top that. Bury me in weighted blankets, Dan.
Oh, Bob or Andrew, excuse me. What do you have? What's your pick of the week? Is it Dune? Do you have something else?
It's Dune.
It's Dune.
Okay.
It's Dune, but you can just pretty much end it at bury me in weighted blankets, Daddy.
Yeah, cut it off there, man. That's
okay. Well, I'm gonna mumble silently. Better watch out. My pick of the week. Watch it this week. With Sports Renaissance Woman. Great, great horror movie on Shudder. Loved it. It's great stuff.
Which movie is this?
Better Watch Out.
I've heard that was pretty decent.
It's a lot of twists. It's pretty great. It's pretty great. Big fan. Bob, Andrew, always a pleasure, guys. Thank you so much for making the time. Per usual, I will talk to you next week. Have yourselves a great weekend.
You too, man.
All right, the Atlanta Sports Guys, we are back, but only the number one fellow sports guy is here. Garrett Chapman's away. He'll be back next week. Max Markovich is here, though. Max, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm doing great. We'll see if maybe this is a better product without Garrett. People are saying that.
People are wondering. I don't think we'll talk about Boy Scouts like we did with Garrett when you weren't here, when we found out we were both Eagle Scouts, and it drifted from there, I believe.
Yeah, we won't be going there, as I was not a Boy Scout, so can't relate on any level.
Yeah, you were cool. That's what happened there. You were not a high school dork. Like, saying that I'm an Eagle Scout was just like, hey, I just want to make sure that everyone knows that I was not dating in high school. Like, that was I ran the school paper and was in Boy Scouts, so not exactly the coolest kid roaming the halls.
Well, I also ran
the
school paper, so I can't say I was the coolest kid either, but we won't go there.
We don't have to do that. We don't have to do that. Max Markovich, the Hawks played last night. Obviously, there was some sort of baseball game that Atlanta was involved in.
I love that we're starting with the Hawks. I love, love, love that.
Well, also, it's more fun. Okay, can I do my old guy rant about the Braves right now in baseball?
Go off, go off. There's nothing to talk about with the Braves, but use your rant.
There's just... The 4 hours is insane. Like, I'm just jotting down. I'm like, we're nearing hour four again. This is hour four. You know what's amazing? A basketball game where it just breezes right through. 2 hours, 2.5 max. Like, it just breezes. It's a nice breeze. The action never stops. I missed basketball so much where I'm like, I'm watching this in my notes. I'm just so engaged. And look, I love baseball too, but it's just a different type of thing. And these games are dragging. These Braves games are dragging. And people are getting so wound up by the announcing and all this other stuff. And I'm just... Baseball has a serious problem with the length of these games. This is the longest season ever in terms of just the amount of time an average game takes. And it's up this playoffs. Like, an average four-hour game, who's watching both AL and NLCS, right? Like, no one's doing that. No one's giving you 8 hours of this. No one. No one outside the people who have to do it for a living. That is it. These games are too long. Just the style of play is really bothering me. Just a lot of, I don't know, man. Like, it's just the bullpen games and having to factor that in. I've been kind of like curmudgeon-y about all of this a little bit.
And it's also, if we want to keep going on our curmudgeon-y takes, the like devaluing of starting pitching in general is just so frustrating to me. And I don't really know why either, but it just seems like that's such a bedrock of baseball is like, do you have the rotation to like dominate a playoff series? And that whole entire equation is just taken out by, you know, I don't want to even use the word analytics, but it is an analytical framework of bullpen games and pulling the pitcher before a third time through the order, no matter what, or like a pitcher will be dealing and they'll just pull him after five. You could have a dominant four or five inning outing and get pulled anyway. And like, that just frustrates me. And it definitely contributes to the length. Even with the like three batter rule, like baseball's trying to do all these things to make the game faster. And like, maybe, I don't know the data, but maybe around the margins, it's kind of worked, but there's nothing you can do. There's no like underlying, pull the plug here and suddenly baseball will be fixed. And this doesn't have to be like a fixed baseball argument. I mean, the Braves are one win from the World Series, but you're right. Like, who cares? Like, baseball is not a national sport anymore in any way. It is completely local. And if, you know, the Braves weren't in the NLCS making this run, like, frankly, my level of care would be minimal. And that's a problem for them, long term, short term, however you want to slice it.
I agree. It's so regionalized, and I just, it is what it is. Like I said, I don't want to poo-poo it for all of our Atlanta fans who are listening and like living and dying, but the obsession with the reactions to all of this and like, oh, we're not a shopping mall, this, that, and the other. I am just curious, though, what people are doing as they're watching these games, because like, it's tough. Like, I'm watching other stuff while this is happening. I can't sit there 4 days in a row with a four-hour Braves game.
The answer is watching the Hawks game.
Well, yes, that is the answer. But I watched that later on last night and with no distractions and went back this morning and finished it up. But, whew, okay, let's talk about it. So Luka clamped by DeAndre Hunter last night. Everyone, like our co-host, Garrett Chapman, he's all in on DeAndre Hunter. And unfortunately for him, unfortunately for our good friend Garrett, he's thrown in the caveat. If he's healthy, this is it. And here's the thing. I'm not, it's one game. I'm not just signing off on DeAndre Hunter's health. I'm not signing off on his knee. Great game. Great lockdown performance. But do you know who the real star of last night was? Max Markvich. Do you know who the real star?
Yeah, it was John Collins. John Collins was unbelievable last night. We can get into Cam Reddish in a minute. Can we talk about DeAndre Hunter first before Cam Reddish?
Okay.
And then we can sort of talk about them in tandem because they, I mean, their careers are just linked. Like, everything about them is linked. But I would like to talk about DeAndre Hunter because it's – the if healthy caveat is important because we have no idea if he can stay healthy long term. But it is true that like – I saw a quote from Capella today about the defense that like he was saying everyone knows like we can score. Everyone knows like this team can shoot. But where we make our gains is on defense. Like where we're going to surprise people is in this defense being good. And that's like he's right. Like, you know. He's right, and all of that starts with DeAndre Hunter and Clint Capella. And we'll talk about Reddish. I'll leave that aside for a sec. But the floor of a defense with a dominant lockdown perimeter defender and a rim protector is high.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so important when Trae Young is your point guard, right? Because, like, I don't know how high the ceiling of a defense with Trae Young can be. But if your floor is, like, top 15 and you have a top 5 offense, you're going to be a darn good NBA team. And so that's where DeAndre Hunter comes in. If he is just, like, a throw him on literally whoever the best opposing perimeter offensive player is and you don't really have to worry about it, and then you have Capella guarding the rim, like the floor, or Okongwu when Okongwu comes back, the floor there is really high on defense. And if this team is like suddenly a top, let's say they're 12th in defense, like we're talking about an elite team, an elite NBA team. And that's where DeAndre Hunter is so exciting.
Yeah, for sure. The attacking nature, like he took 11 shots, 0 free throws last night. He was plus 19. Obviously, what he did defensively is what stood out, 11 points. But it was interesting to see what he was doing. Trae shot the ball okay. He got to the line a couple times. His passing was what was on display in this one. This was more about facilitating and utilizing this depth. I liked the Gorgui Dieng minutes. I thought he was really good. But
when you watch it, like it's staggering, the depth. Like it is, we've talked about it, and you know, you can talk about it on paper, but when you see it, man, like that is, it's not even like 10 quality NBA players, it's like above average, like people who are contributing to winning players. And like there was no Gallinari last night, there's no Okongwu last night, obviously no Lou Williams last night, who, you know, I don't think he's gonna play very much,
but that's what we said. Yeah, he's like just Lou Williams, what if he just became our Udonis Haslam?
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's a total luxury at this point, which is what you want from Lou Williams. But like the depth, I don't think people nationally have really caught on to like how deep this team is. I heard the beginning of Ryan Russillo's podcast today, and he did a whole riff on it. And so some people might sort of start to notice pretty quickly, but like you don't have this kind of depth in the NBA, especially this young. And so that's what's so exciting, is just seeing the bodies they can throw. Like when Trae went out late in the first quarter and Luka went out, and like the second unit, entirely the second unit, just like made a run, opened the lead up to 10, never relinquished it, and that was kind of the end. And that's what's most exciting about this. Like the depth is really, really real. And so I think that's where, like, of all the things you can take away from last night, seeing that was maybe the most exciting.
The depth is real, especially when you look at it compared to the Mavs. Mavs have no depth. It's Jalen Brunson, and that's it. Like, Luka doesn't have... When Luka's not playing well and he's shooting 6 for 17, there's just not a lot in this group. Like, Porzingis did not look good. I don't know what you thought of Porzingis in this one, but not great. Dorian Finney-Smith is too important offensively, is what I also jotted down, where I'm like, I don't like this depth at all. I think this is a real problem for Luka.
The Mavs are running it back, and like
Reggie Bullock is not flipping the script here.
No, we've had this conversation with the Mavs basically since they drafted Luka, and it's a testament to Schlenk, the team the Hawks were able to build around Trae, in contrast to the team the Mavs have built around Luka, and like it was really on display last night because I didn't think Trae played well. Like I'm not like worried about it anyway. I just think he was pressing a little bit. And it didn't matter. They won by 26 against a team everyone's picking to make the playoffs in the West and like maybe do something in the playoffs.
And they won handedly. Like they were the second half, like they came out and they were like, "All right, we're not doing this anymore. This is done."
Right. And if you see if Luka, I don't know what he shot last night. I think it was pretty similar to Trae. If Luka shoots 6 of 16 for 19 points, the Mavs are losing.
Mm-hmm.
Like unless they have a crazy shooting night from their role guys.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't have that. They shot 30% from 3, 13 for 43. The one thing I will, or I shouldn't say one thing. So before we get into Cam, this team didn't get to the line. The Hawks only shot 9 free throws in this one. Was that something you noticed where it was like we weren't attacking, we weren't getting calls? What was it for you? Because I thought it was just the nature of how the game was going and how they were attacking.
I am a little bit, I think there'll be an adjustment period for Trae. Mm-hmm. I mean, Trae got to the line so much last year. And a lot of that was Beatty. And I think even without the rule changes, I think the refs are going to make it a point to not officiate Trae the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they should, you know, like get some of that gimmicky stuff out of his game. I honestly didn't think the Hawks played that well last night. And that's what's so exciting. Like, I didn't think the offense was as sharp as it can be. I think when we were talking about the minutes crunch early in the year, I think that that's also going to manifest in a bit of a shots crunch. Like, guys getting in, having their time, and, like, wanting to get their shots up before they go back and sit down again. I think everyone kind of just, like, had an idea of the kind of shot. Like, DeAndre took a couple pull-up long twos, and it's a little bit nitpicky to talk about his offensive game last night, but I didn't like, they're just not great shots. And, like, with this team, you can get a great shot down the court every single time if you're patient. And I thought they were just a little jumpy, which is to be expected in the first game of the year. My general takeaway was that the Hawks didn't play that well, Trey didn't play that well, and they won by 26 against a legit Western Conference team.
And the best part is they get a even worse version in the East, a bottom cellar dweller on Saturday night with the Cavs.
Yeah, Cam's going to put up 30 in that game.
I don't know. Isaac Okoro is probably going to be on him for a little bit, so we'll see. They'll have some better defenders.
Let's get into Cam.
So the shot's there, and everyone's talking about it. Collins, and I think McMillan said it best of just, like, it changes things that he can provide, the same stuff he provides on defense, on offense. I'm paraphrasing there, but essentially it's just like, yeah, now Cam has proven that, like, for him to be on the floor, he's learned that he had to get better offensively. He had to get the shot right. He had to attack more. And in this game, he attacked and he shot he had 2-3 corner threes in this one, and like everything he was hitting was just nothing but net. Like everything, you could just hear it. And man, the attacking, he's not doing the spin move anymore. He's not doing the dumb stuff where he drives and doesn't know what he's doing with the plan.
There's a little bit of that.
No.
A little bit.
I didn't see it. But he got 15 shots up, and they were okay with it. He got 15 shots up in 21 minutes. This dude, it's everything. Like, he had 3 turnovers, which is still a little high. I mean, Trey had 5, but this is the kind of stuff I wanted. But he needs to make these turnovers because he needs the opportunity to fail and also show that he is better and he is willing to be an attacker. He's willing to be aggressive. Like, that is stuff that DeAndre Hunter is just never going to do. DeAndre Hunter at 0 turnovers, he's not going to be the same kind of offensive attacker that Cam Reddish is. And just, this is the difference in their ceiling, especially when you watch the two of them. It's just that, like, Cam's shot looks right. And what we saw at the end of that Bucks series, I think, has translated. And I think he's just gotten better. And I think it's going to, like, something to monitor early on is how long they keep him with the second unit, how long they go before they insert him into the starting rotation. Because, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter depending on how they close, but it is, if this is the Cam that we can come to expect for 20 to 28 minutes a night, then I don't know how he doesn't get elevated. Does that mean Bogey goes to the bench? I don't know. Like, I'm curious what this means for the rotation.
So, I think he's in the right role as in terms of, like, a starting role, especially if you want him to get his shots up. He's going to be a lot more able, like, a unit with him and Herter on the second unit with DeLon Wright, is a really good lineup conducive to letting Cam be Cam. And, like, I have so many emotions watching Cam, because when it's right, man, he is so smooth. And, you know, like, I haven't been the biggest Cam guy, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I still have my concerns. Like, I think the way he came out last night was, like, so frustrating to me. Because it's like, if you just rein everything back, like, 20%, like, damn, he looks like Paul George sometimes, man. Like, the way he attacks closeout, it all starts with whether the shot is real. If the shot is real, yeah, like, it's all there. It's on. Like, just figure out how to fit in with the unit and go. And the way he attacks closeouts, especially, like, 2 strides and he's got a layup. And it's so smooth that you just – it's just so annoying when he's, like, out of control, step back, 20-foot fadeaway too. It's just a terrible shot when he's surrounded by – you know, really good creators around him who can create for him. Like, the thing with him is, I think the shot is real when he's set. Like, when he can catch, shoot, and be set in rhythm, he's a good shooter. I think I'm getting to that point. But it's like when he's pressing and he just doesn't need to, that it's like, man, like, you can be an all-star if you just don't do that shit. And that's what's, I mean, it's exciting. I think I'm excited to see and Capella was really good last night, so this is not a slight at Capella, but I think lineups with Trey, Bogey or Herter, Cam, DeAndre at the four, which they talked about a little bit last night, and Collins at the five is going to murder people. Just like the switchability, the shooting, like the firepower without like sacrificing defense. Like that's a lineup you can throw at Milwaukee and feel really good about. And I'm just, I don't know. I think there's the Cam being really good opens up so many possibilities for what this team can be. That I think it's, that's what's exciting. I just want to rein it back like 20%. Cause like if you just, if all he did was catch, shoot, catch and attack closeouts and run on the fast break, he would be an insanely valuable player for this team. And that's not all he's going to do because that's not who he is, but that's kind of what I want to see right now.
That's fair. What did you make of Dylan Wright, though? Very different than Trey.
He didn't shoot it well.
I don't think that's ever going to be a thing. I don't think he's going to be the shooter type.
His shooting numbers are not bad. I mean, I think he shot like mid to high 30s from three last year. The main thing I want from the second unit is the main thing I've wanted since Trey was here, which is originally it was to not get killed when Trey was out. And now it's like that unit is a full-on advantage for us. And I think Dylan Wright is like a professional backup point guard who's going to do an admirable job running the offense and letting our playmakers on that unit get the ball where they need to get it. Like when Lou Williams was running that lineup, it's not like that. It's like Lou looking for his, and then if not, someone else can look for theirs. I think Dylan Wright's going to be good at like getting the offense moving, getting the ball in Herter's hands, getting the ball in Cam's hands, and scoring that way. And I think that is all we need from a backup point guard.
That's fair. What lineup did you like the most last night?
I don't remember how much they went to Hunter at the four, but I want to see that.
Yeah.
I really want to see that because, I mean, teams don't play with traditional fours anyway. So in terms of like who he can guard, he can still go, him and Cam are very different defenders, but both very effective. Like I think Cam is like the splashy, flashy, all over the place, super energetic, get in your face defender. And DeAndre Hunter is the like, I'm going to play this screen perfectly and position myself to cut you off, like he did with Luka a million times. And those are really complementary in terms of like those two guys can shut down any two. I mean, not shut down, but you can put those guys on like the Clippers wings and feel good about that when Kawhi's healthy. And so that's more like I want to see that. I want to see the two of them with Okongwu. I want to see the two of them with Collins. I want to see the two of them with Capella. Like I don't care. But I think that if both of them can shoot, they can play together, and that's what I'm most excited about.
Yeah, I would agree. Any Falcons stuff? We got Falcons Dolphins. I don't want to watch this. I don't want to watch this at all.
I mean, I don't know. I'm excited to see whether this offensive... Not excited. I want to see whether this offensive improvement is real. Like, is the Pitts leap happening? We still haven't figured out what happened with Calvin Ridley. We might never. I don't know. They should win the game. They're favorite.
They should win. Tua's back. It looks like the crazy stuff with the Watson rumors and Tua to Denver and all that swirling and Flores having to answer. He's like, no, Tua's our quarterback. But this Dolphins offense has been a disaster. Miles Gaskin's had like one of the worst running back games of all time per Football Outsiders last week. But yeah, this Dolphins offense is broken. So I think we should have a good day from the defense, and Falcons should win and cover. I don't know. I think this should be a normal good win for the Falcons, and then suddenly we're 500 because sure.
Yeah, and it's like a crazy collapse against the Washington Football Team away from being 4-2. Like this team, yeah, I don't know. Like, what do you, when you watch the Falcons, like what are you watching for right now?
Well, I will tell you, the I don't know if you saw Trevor Sikkema's 2022 NFL mock draft for PFF. Yeah, but they had Jordan Davis going to the Falcons at like the 12th spot. I think the Falcons will be drafting 12th or something like that right now. Jordan Davis and Grady Jarrett would just be something else in the interior. But what I'll say is that like you look at it, and the first quarterback taken he has is like 13th or 11th, Malik Willis to the Washington Football Team. And this is not a good draft. Suddenly Spencer Rattler out of the equation, and I'm just like, oh, the Falcons are like, they don't, the Matt Ryan stuff has to continue. Like, we have to ride with this now because there's nobody next year, and then we just, like, this is it. Like, we have to figure it out with Matt Ryan, with Kyle Pitts, with Calvin Ridley. I want to see if Mike Davis can figure it out. Like, I just he hasn't broken through. I want to see if this offensive line continues to get better. McGarry's been awesome. I want to see if that continues. I want to see if we get any pressure, because the tackles,
didn't they put McGarry on IR,
or did he go on IR? Oh no,
I think he might have gone on IR.
That's not good.
No, it's really quite bad. Just as the offense was getting its rhythm.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He got placed on IR. Or no, he's on COVID.
COVID.
That's what it was. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's out regardless.
Yeah, he is out. Josh Andrews got activated from IR. That's not good. I don't like that. I don't like that.
But I think your Matt Ryan point is important, because I think, man, I was worried those first few weeks that he was like washed, like he was Big Ben washed, that he was like Eli Manning washed. And I don't think we're there. Like, I think that was an adjustment period with this offense. I think Arthur Smith was trying to figure it out. I think there was some disconnect with Pitts. Like, I think the biggest question I have is like whether that stuff is past us, or whether it was like you're playing the Jets type of thing. But I'm really encouraged by how Ryan has looked. Did you see the rumor that they were going to take, not the rumor, the report, I guess, that they were going to take Trey Lance if he dropped to 4?
That doesn't surprise me at all, because that's what I'd heard too, is that like they were either taking Lance or they weren't taking a quarterback.
I don't know how that makes me feel about their approach, or how, like, it says quite a bit about what they think of Justin Fields, I guess, is more my point.
Yeah, and Mac Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. But I think Falcons fans need to strap in now, especially when you look at next year. You look at where the season could go. I think we need to strap in for a Pittsburgh, New Orleans type situation in Atlanta, where it's like, maybe late stage Philip Rivers and Chargerland. Like, this is the reality. Like, I don't see a path to Matt Ryan moving on anytime soon. So, like, finding a way. I don't think they can pull this off, because it's just so hard to do this. It is so hard to thread this needle of retooling enough to compete with a pricey veteran quarterback. It's just really, really hard to do that. And this offense and defense still has so many holes that I'm not sure. But I think that's the new normal. We're going to ride this out and see what happens. On a positive note, though, AJ Terrell, this is from PFF, only quarterbacks to allow fewer than 100 yards in coverage, minimum of 150 coverage snaps. AJ Terrell, 42. Okay. Casey Hayward, 87. Jamel Dean, 96.
I think there's this narrative out there that he's not been...
He's good, elite now. Like, he's actually been an elite corner.
It's like frustrating because he doesn't get talked about at all. I think mostly just because people just sort of associate Falcons defense is bad. That pick didn't work out. But if you're talking about like guys they are building with going forward, like retool with this person, I mean, Terrell is probably in the first 3 or 4 names. And that's another thing. Like, this year is just kind of about identifying those guys you can build with, those guys you want to keep. And I think he's pretty clearly one of those guys. I do think like the Pittsburgh New Orleans thing is it's kind of the approach Dimitroff wanted to take at the end with the cap, and sort of kicking the cap down the road and figuring it out later. The problem was, like, we weren't making the playoffs. Like, those New Orleans-Pittsburgh teams have made the playoffs and have competed. Right. And when you're competing, it's okay to say, yeah, figure it out, retool. This is getting old, but we can patch it up. When you're going, let's say they go 7-10, like, what does that do for you? And it's easier to say, like, it's time to just, like, move on at quarterback, but I don't even know, like, what that looks like. Like, if you don't like Justin Fields, you don't take Justin Fields just because it might be time soon to move on at quarterback.
That's what I like, is that they love Lance. They love Lance, and Lance was their guy. He wasn't there, so they're like, we're not just taking a guy just to take a guy.
Yeah, I think that's how I feel, too, but it leaves them in this limbo of... all right, Kyle Pitts is probably awesome.
He's going to be a 10-time Pro Bowl or whatever. Like, he's already awesome. Like, he's the eighth graded tight end per PFF at this point. Like, he's our best receiver. He's going to be a superstar for years to come. But we just don't know how much that translates to wins in the short term.
Yeah, and are they going to be playing this game that, like, Carolina's playing or, like, mm-hmm. Denver's playing, where you're just kind of straddling the middle ground of quarterbacks because, you know, you haven't found your guy you love and you're signing the Sam Darnolds, Teddy Bridgewaters of the world and trying to just do it that way. And, like, that's so, from an outsider's perspective, that's so uninspiring. But it's not more uninspiring than, like, bottoming out and, you know, having a terrible team again. Like, I root for this team to win. Last year, I was, like, all in kind of on the tank a little bit. But, yeah, I don't know. It's a weird spot to be in as a Falcons fan, but I'm also, like, kind of weirdly optimistic. Like, if this offense continues an upward trajectory, like, that's something you can hang your hat on and say, okay, we have our coach, we have our offensive scheme. That's not going anywhere. Let's find the right players.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. And I got it backwards, by the way. It's Lindstrom, not McGarry, who has the 80 PFF grade.
I figured. I think McGarry's kind of on the
he's okay
on the fringes here.
Yeah, he's okay. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. At least, hey, back to back wins for the Falcons. That's cool. Little baby steps.
It really could be four in a row. Like,
that's a possibility. Yes.
Well, like, it could have been had they beat Washington.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be 3-2 right now, right? And with a win against a terrible Dolphins team, would be 4 in a row after starting 0-2, and then people would be talking playoffs.
Correct. Whew, and that Washington game was so dumb. It was so dumb. Yeah. Last thing, we'll wrap up here. Is your Michigan Wolverines going to be able to fight off the Fitzgeralds?
Man, I was really about to bring up last week's Tennessee thing.
You don't have to do that.
We can get there. Yeah,
we had a normal one. It's fine.
We didn't even talk about the Joe Milton play. Oh my god!
Oh my god! I blacked out. I couldn't believe that happened.
About 8 group texts of mine. Anyway, this is an extension of the bye week ahead of MSU next week, which is going to be Armageddon. I mean, truly, like, you should see the, like, Michigan message boards right now and the Michigan State message boards ahead of next week. Like, things are going to burn. Undefeated Michigan, undefeated Michigan State in East Lansing with, like, everything on the line is just going to be nuts. To answer your question, I'm not worried about the fighting Pat Fitzgeralds. I'm hoping J.J. McCarthy can get some second half run. I'm hoping everyone stays healthy, and I'm hoping for everyone's safety ahead of next week.
There you go. We're playing in Alabama, so a little bit different scenario.
What do you even, like, do you even get excited for that game?
No.
Who's going to play quarterback?
Hooker. He's available.
Is he? Okay. Mm.
It looked really a lot worse after last
weekend. Joe Milton in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't watch. I don't think I could handle it. I really don't think I can handle Joe Milton against Alabama. I don't know why.
Can you at least take me through, like, your reaction, your emotions on that last play last week?
You know what's funny is, like, I knew he was going to run out of bounds. Actually, I shouldn't say that. I knew he was going to do one of two things. Either run out of bounds or he was going to throw it into the end zone after crossing the line of scrimmage. Like, my gut told me crossing the line of scrimmage, when he moved, I don't think he knew where he was on the field. And when he was still looking at the end zone 7 yards past the line of scrimmage, I was like, oh, he's going to launch this. I don't think he knows where he is. So my inner monologue was like, nothing good was coming of that. Like, I knew nothing good was coming. And he found Mural first, and that was, like, one of those things where it just very nerve-wracking. And then the next play after that, obviously, he runs around, and, like, could he have kneeled it instead of spiked it? A possibility. That was in play, we learned. But it was just dumb. I mean, there was probably nothing open, but, I mean, Heupel, even after the game, was just like, yeah, obviously, it's not a good play, and we didn't want that. And Heupel will just never speak negatively or ill about any player. Very protective, good stuff. But it was just bad. It was just unbelievable. And it was like, he can never be on the field again. Like, I don't care what Harrison Bailey is like in practice. Like, Joe Milton cannot get any more snaps. Like, that's he just can't. And that's why I was like, how do we even, it's like rewarding him for just, if we gave him the start against Bama, rewarding him for that ending. It's just, no, you can't. Like, I just can't have him on the field anymore. Like, it's just, man, all the talent in the world, crazy arm talent. It's just everything else. It just doesn't work. I forgot who it was. I think it was Ryan Nanny of Shutdown Fullcast who had this analogy for Joe Milton, where it was like, he said the quarterback, he asked fans to think about the quarterback who has the best arm, has, like, he knows where he needs to go. Like, Joe Milton knows what he needs to do, but his body and like betrays him, where it's just like, it will never go where it's supposed to. He'll never do the thing that he knows he should do. He just won't do it. Or he knows that guy's open and he'll see it, and then the ball goes way, way, just somewhere else, where in his head he sees it going right there, and then that's just not what happens in reality ever.
Yeah, I mean, I wish anyone could have seen any of this coming. That really would have been okay. Really would have been something.
Okay.
No, when he left Michigan and he went to Tennessee and he looked like he was going to win the starting job, he gave a quote, I'm sure you've read it or seen it, about how, like, Michigan's someone asked him, like, what's the biggest difference between Michigan's coaching staff and Tennessee's? And he said, at Tennessee, they just, like, kind of let you do your thing. Like, at Michigan, like, it was, they wanted you to be a robot, or, like, it was robotic or something like that. And, man, like, Joe Milton could use some robot. He could use a, hey, man, throw the check down, or, like, don't bail the pocket immediately just because you feel like you should, or don't throw the ball 30 yards over that guy's head. I don't know. But the answer is somebody will be lured back in with that arm talent, because it's impossible. It's inevitable. Joe Milton will play in college for 30 years somehow, and he will lure every Power 5 team in the country into bringing him in at some point. And then he'll lure an NFL team into bringing him into a practice squad, and then it'll end.
I don't know. He'll be awesome at, like, USF. That's where he needs to wind up. Like, he needs to be a South Florida Bull.
I don't think he'll ever be awesome. I'm just going to say that.
Okay. Not even at a group of five level.
No. I don't think he can. I don't... We're still talking about, like, can he throw with touch? Like, he can throw the ball a million yards. That doesn't mean he can be a competitive quarterback anywhere. He's never thrown for a higher than 50% completion percentage, I don't think, anywhere in a full season. It's not going to happen. It doesn't happen.
It's probably not going to happen. I just don't want it to happen to Tennessee. Got to move on. Hooker's been a delight, though, so I'm just glad he's healthy. But I also would have sat.
Good.
I may have sat Hooker because you have a bye next week, and then you got Kentucky. I just want to make sure he is in bubble wrap before Kentucky, because I think they can beat Kentucky on the road in Lexington. That's the biggest win of the year if they can pull that off. So we shall see. We shall see. Max Markovich, we can find you on Twitter.com at Max_Markovich. Garrett missed you this week. We'll all be back next week on this podcast to talk about all kinds of great stuff. The Hawks still being undefeated, the Braves in the World Series, the Falcons marching towards the playoffs. Everything's great in Atlanta sports and our college teams. Everything's awesome.
I love that we just didn't even really acknowledge the fact that the Braves are, like, they lose one game and everyone's just like, oh, it's happening, it's over, it's done, everything sucks.
Yeah, there's nothing to talk about until you get through it, and that's why when people are like, there's, oh, it's fine, it's like, until they get through it or they don't, there's just not much to say.
It's like all PTSD just immediately comes back.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Max, talk to you next week, buddy.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Hello, and welcome back to the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am now joined by Jimmy Stein, who covers a football team that I hope goes easy on my Tennessee Volunteers in 24 hours. Jimmy, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you having me on the traditional fourth Saturday in October.
Right, the traditional fourth Saturday in October. I love the questions about this just every year that Saban and now Heupel have to answer these of just like, is this a rivalry? Tennessee obviously not beating them since 2006, never beating Alabama with Saban. Nothing tells you that that's going to change this year, correct?
I certainly like Alabama's position. I don't think you're going to find many Alabama supporters that will want to trade rosters, you know, for right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alabama's established. It's literally still in the midst of what we believe is the greatest dynasty of all time in college football. And it feels like Alabama's still in the midst of it. It's not over yet. Obviously, Josh Heupel has done a really good job with what he's inherited at Tennessee, but he's just now starting to build it. So I like Alabama's chances. It's not a team without flaws. Texas A&M was good enough to take advantage of what Alabama doesn't do particularly well, you know, this team. But, I don't think that Tennessee has enough players yet to cause problems for Alabama. But having Hendon Hooker back will be a big deal. And Matt Zenitz from On3 is reporting this morning that Hendon Hooker is likely to play tomorrow.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm surprised. I'm surprised Heupel and company are going to put him out there. I mean, it's not like this defense is the type of defense that's going to really rough him up. Like, Henry Toatoa, I believe, still, old friend Henry Toatoa still leads the Tide in tackles. But this is not a scary, aggressive, right, physical Alabama defense that Hendon Hooker has to really be worried about getting banged up in. But I don't know. Hooker got demolished last weekend, and that dude's a warrior, but I was surprised to see that he will be suiting up. But for my sanity and yours, Jimmy, that means no Joe Milton, and that's a win for America, in my opinion.
Yeah, Milton's had his struggles, but you know, this week I've seen Tennessee a couple of times this year and I've been impressed with Heupel and certainly Hendon Hooker, but until I really studied the Tennessee games this week, I was almost shocked at Hendon Hooker's numbers. I mean, they're very, very impressive game to game. Very consistent, an efficient passer, but clearly a kid that, though he's efficient, pushes the ball downfield. And then he makes plays with his legs, rushing for over 100 yards against Ole Miss just last week before the injury. In terms of whether it's dangerous to play against the Alabama defense, this is a good defense. It's going to be one of the better defenses in the SEC, but this is not vintage Nick Saban defense. I think most Alabama fans would agree that the best Saban defenses were like 2011, 2016 was outstanding with just virtually every player starting on the defense, a first or second round pick. Now, this defense is good, not as scary. They do have one scary dude, however, Will Anderson, number 31, he's as good a pass rusher as there is in college football, and he is frankly just as good as any Saban defender throughout the dynasty. You know, really, there's an ongoing conversation: is Will Anderson the best defensive player of the Saban era? Which is saying a lot. That's like saying you're the best Boston Celtic in the 70s. You know, you're really good if you're the best of Saban's anything. And Will Anderson may be the best defender of the whole Saban era at Alabama.
That's interesting. High praise. What flipped last week against Mississippi State? Why were they able to handle them and bounce back? What did you see that they cleaned up from their loss previously?
Well, I think you just used a great term, cleaned up. This Alabama team had been error prone, even in the games prior to A&M. Lots and lots of penalties, drop balls, just mental errors, busts in the secondary. It wasn't like in any of the games prior to A&M, Alabama was getting physically whipped. There was just a lot of errors. They played a much cleaner game against Mississippi State, a much smarter game. I'm sure there was some level of intensity that was there that might not have been there in previous games. The losses will do that to you. At Alabama, after a loss, Alabama has averaged winning by 31 points. So I think it was basically a continuation of a pattern we've seen at Alabama where there's often been a big bounce back after a loss. Coach Saban really has their attention at this point. But really, it was just a matter of playing cleaner. It wasn't a huge adjustment. It wasn't changing the offense, changing the defense. There was just a couple of minor personnel moves that didn't mean much. It was just a cleaner, more intense performance. And instead of playing well for stretches, Alabama played really well for most of the game.
What has been different about Young in the last few weeks? What has he gotten a lot better at?
Well, he was pretty amazing from game one, considering that last year during his freshman year, Bryce Young only threw 22 balls the entire season. So this was a pretty inexperienced kid, and he played really well in the opener. I think one thing that seems obvious for a guy who's in a lot of the Heisman polls, you know, Bryce has been better than the other team's quarterback every week. And that started in the Miami game, which kicked off the season when he's playing a sixth-year All-Star like De'Aaron King. Bryce Young was the best quarterback on the field that day. He's very efficient. He's smart. His intangibles are just as good as the tangibles, frankly. He's a natural leader. He's very bright. He's really good with the media. His teammates like him, even with the extraordinary NIL deals that have come his way. That doesn't appear to have affected anything in the clubhouse with Bryce. So really just a really good kid, a hard worker. Now, tangibles on the field. He's a small guy. I think if Tennessee fans haven't seen Bryce Young play yet, they'll be stunned at how small he is. I mean, Bryce is small, not for a quarterback. Bryce is small for a football player. He's small for a cornerback. I mean, this is a little guy, but he has a more than adequate arm. His arm talent's great. He gets rid of the ball quickly. He's a very good athlete. He's been hesitant to run for a couple of reasons. Number one, he says he's been fighting a stereotype his entire life at quarterback. People see his size and assume, oh, he's just a guy that runs around. So he intentionally doesn't run. He uses his feet to buy himself more time to use his arm. And it's frustrated Alabama fans at times this year. There have been times Bryce clearly passes up an opportunity to take a good gain on the ground, and he passes it up. Secondly, with Alabama lacking experience and backup quarterback and not having a ton of confidence just yet in the two backups, I don't think Alabama coaches like seeing Bryce Young take any unnecessary hits. So he doesn't run it very often, but when he does and you see him use those feet, those legs, the first question you're going to have is, why doesn't he do that more often? He's really good, you know, with his feet. But he's a pass-first guy. He's been extremely efficient. He's averaging basically 300 yards a game. I believe he's only thrown maybe two or three interceptions, even with all the attempts, which is amazing considering his lack of experience. He's not playing behind a vintage Alabama offensive line. So I do think Tennessee, who's pretty good up front on defense, I won't be surprised if Tennessee gets some pressure on Bryce Young Saturday.
See, I don't know about the pressure aspect. I mean, Barron's been great this year. Young is coming into his own. Matthew Butler's been awesome. But I think this front seven, they're just so good stopping the run. Like, Ole Miss with Parrish and company couldn't do anything. Like, no one's been able to run the ball, and they keep trying at the middle, and it just doesn't work. The way to do it is bounce it outside, do RPO stuff, and make Tennessee have to decide. And stay in their lanes. But I am curious what Bama does if they're not able to run up the middle. I'm curious what happens if Young tries to attack. Who does he go after? Does he go after Walton Burrell? I'm going to guess he goes after Burrell. It's my guess. Maybe Turnage, the revenge game there. But it's not the
We had sort of a Henry Toho Toho for Brandon Turnage trade in the offseason.
I would still rather have Toho Toho back based on our season thus far, but it happens. But I am curious about that matchup. Is there a particular matchup that you're most curious about?
Well, Alabama is going to know Turnage quite a bit. Here's what's sort of interesting, as you know, everyone's dealing with transfers. It's 2021. It's the new world we're in, right? And last week, Will Anderson against Mississippi State notched 4 sacks in the game. That was the most sacks in a single game at Alabama since Derek Thomas, who Will is often compared to. But Will went up against Mississippi State's right tackle most of the game. Alabama will move him around side to side based on what they believe is the best matchup for Will. Last week it was Mississippi State's right tackle who bore the brunt of Will Anderson for 60 minutes and gave up the 4 sacks and numerous other pressures. And that kid was an Alabama transfer, a kid named Scott Lashley, who couldn't dent the starting lineup at Alabama, transferred to Mississippi State, and he's been a starter there since he arrived in Starkville, and he's a good player. But Will Anderson's going to make a lot of good players struggle. And I say that to say Alabama knew Scott Lashley's game really well. He'd been on the team for 3 years before he left. Similarly to Brandon Turnage, I wouldn't be surprised if it's turnage, just in the sense that Nick Saban knows his defensive back so well. He's going to know turnage inside and out. While Brandon was certainly a promising player at Alabama, and Alabama misses him, and Alabama could use him right now, frankly. But Alabama knows turnage so well, I wouldn't be surprised to see them target him a few times. Alabama's not quite as good at wide receiver as they have been in the past 2 years. As people know, Alabama put four receivers in the first round in Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs, Devontae Smith, and Jalen Waddle. Alabama doesn't have one of those anymore, I'm sure to everyone in the league's relief. They do have two good wide receivers. Number one, Jameson Williams. He's a transfer from Ohio State. He's the sprinter. His 4.4 speed is legit. He can really, really run. He's just not the most gifted, polished receiver. That's what the NFL would like to see out of him. John Mechie, who's been a part of the Tide receiving corps for a couple of years, he's the other good player. He's good. He may even make second-team All-SEC at the end of the year. He's good, but he doesn't belong in that Waddle, Devontae, Jeudy conversation. So Alabama's good. Are they good enough to just wreck Tennessee secondary? Probably not. Not for 60 minutes. But the combination of Bryce Young's talent and those two receivers, and Alabama has a couple of good targets at tight end as well. Alabama's passing game is pretty good. I would say it's the strength of the offense, but Alabama sure would like to establish the run. Tennessee, it does have a good run defense. That's going to be tougher on Alabama. I suspect, Chase, that Alabama will start the game throwing it quite a bit and maybe save the run for later in the game.
That's what I would bet, too. How does Alabama defensively contain Hooker and Teyon Evans?
Well, Alabama has used a spy pretty often when they play an athletic quarterback like Hooker. I wouldn't be surprised if To'o To'o, for instance, or maybe safety Jordan Battle is sort of assigned that role to sort of contain Hooker. Alabama likes to contain quarterbacks like Hendon Hooker. They don't blitz them to death. What they're trying to do is they'll accept death by a thousand cuts. They don't want to give up the big play. And that's why they'll play sort of, I think Coach Saban refers to it as a mush rush, which is just basically everyone being very gap disciplined. Stay outside. Don't let the quarterback bounce outside and make a big play. Keep everybody in the middle of the field where the help is. It's not super exciting. It's not going to produce a ton of sacks and tackles for losses, but it's pretty effective against most athletic quarterbacks like Hendon. But Hendon Hooker can push the ball downfield, so he's an interesting matchup for Alabama, to say the least.
The rest of the way, what are you looking for out of the Crimson Tide after this game and the rest of the ways? What storylines are you monitoring?
I think the one overarching one is you know, Alabama's only missed the college football playoff. I think it's one time. And now they've lost their margin for error with the loss at Texas A&M. For Alabama to make the playoff, they have to win out. And that's a daunting thing to say in the SEC when you play at Tennessee, then you play LSU, then you play Arkansas, and, of course, at Auburn at the end. But what's really possibly awaiting for Alabama, should they make it all the way through that unscathed, is an extremely good Georgia Bulldog team in Atlanta. Before the loss to Texas A&M, there was this thought, maybe Alabama and Georgia are 12-0 in that SEC championship game, and both teams would make the playoff regardless of who wins the SEC championship. But Alabama's loss to A&M has put them in a different position. For Alabama to make the playoff, they got to win out. That includes beating Georgia in Atlanta. So to me, Chase, the challenge for Alabama is to improve, to get better. I like to say, look, the Alabama teams we've seen so far aren't going to beat Georgia. They're not going to beat Georgia. They got to get better. That includes this Tennessee game. Alabama needs to continue to get cleaner, and play for 60 minutes. They did a much better job against Mississippi State, but it's going to take an even better performance than that to beat Georgia. So Tennessee is a great chance for Alabama to improve, to get better. When you're playing a team that challenges you in spots, that's the team you can improve against. You know, playing New Mexico State, who Alabama plays in November, you're not going to get any better. You might get healthier when you play New Mexico State because you don't have to play your frontline guys as much or at all. But to get better, you play teams that can challenge you in places like Tennessee can, Arkansas can, LSU, and certainly Auburn.
Well, I'm glad we could do that for you guys. I'm glad we could get you right. I'm glad that my volunteers can do that. It's good.
Hey, well, I expect Tennessee to score some points tomorrow. I thought maybe 14 earlier in the week, but now that Hendon Hooker is going to play, I have a hard time imagining any, even a quality defense like Alabama. I think Hendon Hooker is probably good for 21, 24 points. And, hey, Alabama off their game on offense. Alabama only scored 31 points offensively against a couple of SEC defenses this year. If Hendon Hooker can get his 21 to 24 points and Alabama can't get even to that 31-point ceiling, you could have a close game in the fourth quarter. And if that happens, then anything can happen. We all know this crazy streak, and it is crazy, and I know it's a lot more fun in Tuscaloosa than it is in Knoxville, but it's going to end. I mean, it's going to end. And knowing college football like we do, Chase, it's probably going to end when we least expect it, not the one that we see coming from a mile away.
You heard it here first. Jimmy's got the Vols and an upset. He's got the Vols. Hendon Hooker, Teyon Evans, Devontae Payton just blowing the top off. There you go. There you go. Jimmy, what can we check out from you across On3 this week?
Yeah, usually find my posts on the On3 Sports message board, on the Alabama message board, or posting two or three lengthy opinions a day on various subjects. Today was actually about basketball. How about that? You know Alabama fans are excited about Nate Oates, and we're actually discussing and talking about basketball during the heart of football season, but that's the way it is around here now. Please subscribe to On3 Sports. We think one day will be the premier destination for all college football fans across the country with the content that we'll provide nationally, regionally, and per team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go do that. Check it out and become a subscriber at On3 if you have not already done so. It's great stuff. Great stuff. So thank you for making the time, Jimmy. This was great. I greatly appreciate it. And good luck the rest of the way. And I will check back in with you again soon.
Thanks so much, Chase.
All right, that'll do it for today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Thank you to Jimmy, Max, Bob, and Andrew, as always, for making the time on this Saturday edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Don't forget, folks, if you liked today's episode, make sure to leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Tell a friend, family member, whoever, coworker about the pod. And that I greatly appreciate it. Go to ChaseThomasPodcast.com today. Like the Facebook page at Facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. Go to SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com. Again, that is SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com for access to all of my sports articles, all my sports writing, and even links to this very pod. So go there, subscribe, type in your email, all that good stuff. And then email me. If you have any mailbag questions or any questions for me, ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Again, that is ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Chase_Thomas. That is all I've got for today. No pod tomorrow. It's Sunday, so day off. And then we'll be back on Monday. Thanks, guys.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.